Ashu.
Ashu.
Life air.
Life air.
Yaha.
Yaha.
He who.
He who.
To.
To.
But.
But.
Iha.
Iha.
In this body.
In this body.
Indriyaran.
Indriyaran.
Possessing all the sense organs.
Possessing all the sense organs.
Atma.
Atma.
The soul.
The soul.
Sa.
Sa.
He.
He.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Anyaha.
Anyaha.
Different.
Pranadehayo,
from the life air and the material body. Translation. In the body, the most important substance is the life air, but that also is neither the listener nor the speaker. Beyond even the life air, the soul also can do nothing, for the super soul is actually the director in cooperation with the individual soul. The super soul conducting the activities of the body is different from the body and living force. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead distinctly says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarvasya chaham riti sani vishto mitak smritir jnanam apohanam cha. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Although the Atma, or soul, is present in every material body, dehinosmin yata dehe, he is not actually the chief person acting through the senses, mind, and so on. The soul can merely act in cooperation with the supersoul, because it is the supersoul who gives him directions to act or not to act, mitak smritir jnanam apohanam cha. One cannot act without his sanction, for the supersoul is upadrista and anumanta, the witness and sanctioner. One who studies carefully under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master can understand the real knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually the conductor of all the activities. Although the individual soul possesses the indriyas or senses, he is not actually the proprietor, for the proprietor is the supersoul. Consequently, the supersoul is called Rishikesh, or the individual soul, and the individual soul is advised by the direction of the supersoul to surrender to him and thus be happy. Sarva dhammam parichyaja mam ekam sharanam vraja. Thus, he can become immortal and be transferred to the spiritual kingdom, where he will achieve the highest success of an eternal, blissful life of knowledge. In conclusion, the individual soul is different from the body, senses, living force, and the airs within the body, and above him is the supersoul who gives the individual soul all facilities. The individual soul who renders everything to the supersoul lives very happily within the body. Om Ganat Mirandasya Ganandina Savakaya Chakshur Om Minatam Dina Padma Shri Gurave Maha. So, I guess you've been studying this pastime or this preaching of Hiranyakashipu now for some time. And it's quite interesting how Hiranyakashipu has mutated from at the beginning of the chapter ordering that the Brahmins be killed and that all the sacrifices be stopped and there be pillaging and destruction of the Vedic society. And then he takes a few shlokas out to pacify his mother and his sister-in-law. And then immediately, at the beginning of the next chapter, he resumes his constitutional position as a demoniac personality. So when I was reading this, I kind of was reminded of a boy who, or a girl for that matter, who has their sights set on enjoying another living entity. And they come about and they write some email in this day and age, or they call on the cell phone, or they speak face to face and they say, you know, you're the most beautiful person I've ever seen in my life and I love you dearly. And the other person thinks, wow, he really thinks I'm great and he loves me. But actually, behind what he says, there's another motive, a motive which has nothing to do with what he's saying. He's just saying it because he has something to accomplish. And so for one who examines what he says at face value, he may think that there's another motive. But if you examine more carefully, and certainly if you examine the person's actions over time, you can understand that there's another motive there, an ulterior motive, which results in contrary behavior, ultimately. And so that we see this with Hiranyakashipu, he had a design. First of all, he was very angry because his brother had been killed. But aside from that situation, that he wanted revenge for the death of his brother, he was a very materialistic person. He was an atheistic person. He wanted to be the controller, and we'll see later on that he actually, although now he says the supersoul is in control and God is in control and we're not that body, barely a few seconds later he says, I want to be immortal, and begins to perform very severe austerities to conquer over the immortality, the mortality which he's now speaking of so nicely in the verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He decides that actually people should worship him, that he is actually qualified to receive their puja and their pratishtha, their worship. He also loses sight very quickly of the fact that fate is caused by the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in our past activities, and therefore it should be accepted. He loses sight of that very, very quickly. But he also sees that, listen, I have this hysterical woman and this hysterical woman, and both of them are very, very disturbed, and they're going to distract me, they demand attention, and even according to Vedic Dharma, I have to take care of them, so let me get them out of the way. And he presents them with this philosophy that, you know, actually he's not his body, and he shouldn't lament because it's inevitable what happens to him. And they're very pacified, and ultimately they go home and they decide to look at things differently. And then he proceeds with his nefarious activities. So what is it about this situation that's different or similar to our own situation is really the way we should look at the Bhagavatam. While I was in Vrindavan recently, I had opportunities for teaching and I had opportunities for studying. And one of my most fortunate opportunities was studying Srimad Bhagavatam, at least a little bit, from His Grace Bhojan Prabhu. And we were studying the 7th, 8th, and 9th cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I wasn't there for all the classes, but the very poignant realization in hearing from this very advanced devotee was that every aspect of the Srimad Bhagavatam is looked upon as a lesson to be learned for personal growth, for personal application. And not only is it looked at verse by verse, as we do here, we tend to look at verse by verse, and Srila Prabhupada, because he knows what we need, our medicine, and because he can seek, like the swan, the nectar, even from a filthy place, he hones in on this again and again, this idea that, yes, you're not that body. Yes, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in control. But you see here in this purport, a little bit towards the end, he kind of alludes to Hiranyakashipu's eventual trip down the wrong path by saying that actually, if you want to become immortal, then you should render devotional service. You should realize your eternal spiritual nature, your loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he says, thus he can become immortal and be transferred to the spiritual kingdom where he will receive the highest success of an eternal blissful life of knowledge. So, but this, somehow Hiranyakashipu missed that point. It just went right over his head, even though he was able to speak about it from a seemingly philosophical point of view. Once I was in a car in Calcutta, and there was a tailorwala there, a person pulling a cart, and he had a Brahmin thread on. And Srila Prabhupada commented, you see this man, he has a Brahmin thread on. If we invited him to come to our Mayapur Chandra Mandir, and we told him all you have to do is give up illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, come to render some service to the deities and in the temple in Mayapur, we'll take care of everything you need. We'll give you a place to live. We'll give you prasadam. And he would say, no, thank you. I'd rather pull Taylor. Because the living entity, even though he may have some Vedic knowledge, if he doesn't have realization, if the depth of his desire does not reflect deeply upon that knowledge, then that knowledge will be to naught. It will not help him to make the ultimate spiritual advancement that he needs to make in order to achieve the success of this life as a human being. So in looking at this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam and trying to understand how this applies to our life or to my life, I came deeply thinking about the concept of revenge and deeply thinking about the concept of Tathenu Kampaham Shishimikshimanam. Because these two concepts, revenge on one side and Tathenu Kampaham Shishimikshimanam on the other, that we should tolerate those suffering conditions that go on in our lives, and on the other hand, the idea that we should somehow get even or retaliate or make things better by our own prowess, fighting against all odds. This is a balance which we need to strike in our lives. And if we falter and start to consider that whatever has happened to us is unjust, whatever has happened to us is by mistake, and then begin to consider whose fault is it, and try to deal with that, try to get even with the person who we pinpoint as being responsible for our suffering, then we wander into this Hiranyakashipu territory. We wander into this Hiranyakashipu philosophy. Because his motivation for everything was to, A, by his own prowess, achieve everything he wanted, and B, to get revenge for suffering that he thought was unjust. Unjust to his brother, unjust to himself. And with that faulty misconception, he acted in so many heinous ways, even to the point of trying to kill his own son, terrifying an entire society, causing the demigods to run and hide, and ultimately even taking over some of their positions. Certainly not the activities of someone who is engaged in devotional service, but Srila, or aware of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But Srila Prabhupada often quoted this other verse, this other consciousness, Tathenu Kampaham Shishimakshamanam, that we should tolerate, one who can tolerate the sufferings of his life and see them as the action or the design of the Supreme Personality of Godhead based on his one's own action, that he deserves these things. And he can go on tolerating them without complaining, without becoming disturbed, and still engage in devotional service. To that person, devotional service and the privilege of going back to Godhead becomes his birthright. Sadaya Bhak means he gets it without having to make any other extraneous effort. Srila Prabhupada compared to like a son who inherits the father's legacy without having to do anything. All he has to do is stay alive and remain the son, and then the father dies and he automatically inherits everything. So we also, if we can just go on engaging in devotional service, tolerating whatever comes to us because of our past sinful activities and otherwise, then we can also inherit that right to go back to Godhead. So why can't we do that? It seems to be a very, very difficult thing to do. If you look even in the Bhagavatam amongst great souls, Janmejaya, the son of Maharaj Parikit, so many others who, Dhruva Maharaj, they got caught in this revenge cycle. They might have gotten out of it, like Janmejaya, he got out of it because the demigods begged him, Brahma begged him, please stop killing all these snakes. You already dealt with the situation that your father was killed by a snake bite. Now you're overreacting. Your revenge is driving you to act improperly, your desire for revenge. Same thing with Dhruva. His desire for revenge just put him in a situation where fortunately he came in contact with Narada. He began meditating on Vishnu, but his initial desire was to get a kingdom that would make his brother and his father put to shame. It would put them down. But then when he actually met Vishnu, he came to his senses and he realized that even though he was looking for broken pieces of glass, he had found a rare jewel in his relationship with Krishna, and he was repentant. He was sorry. He didn't even want those things. But Krishna said, well, actually, you asked for them, so you should get them. And he was given what he had originally. And then you have persons of lesser qualification, someone like Duryodhana or even Dhritarashtra, who spent so much of their lives trying to get revenge, trying to make up for perceived shortcomings in their own sense gratification and perceived privileges that others had gotten at their expense. Dhritarashtra could never get over the fact that because he was blind, he couldn't be the king. He was always seeking to get revenge for that. He didn't want the Pandavas to have the rights to the kingdom. He wanted his son, even though he knew his son was extremely unqualified in so many ways, still he dedicated his whole life to putting his son into a position for which would ultimately cause suffering to so many people. What to speak of Duryodhana, who himself killed, maimed, in so many ways threatened even to kill Kunti, what to speak of the Pandavas in the House of Lakh, because he was so wanted so much to have revenge. For what? For the fact that the Pandavas were born first and that they were the rightful heirs to the kingdom. So this tendency for revenge becomes an all-encompassing and pushing motivation for our behavior, and it can be very subtle. Just like 2 years ago in the Blind Uncle Band, I was given a part, I don't know how many of you still have nightmares about that experience, where I was playing a Jewish woman whose husband is rather famous among the Jewish community because her son had died of a disease which made you get old when you were still very young. So the boy died at 13, but he had the body of a 65 or 85-year-old. And so they were pondering, why do bad things happen to good people? And that thought, they came up with a whole philosophy that actually they were mistakes, my friend. And God didn't intend them to happen, but sometimes God just isn't in control. Sometimes he loses control. Bad things happen when they shouldn't happen. And so their understanding is, well, give God a break. Don't blame it on him. He has good intentions, even though sometimes he can't change things. So, but that's not our philosophy, certainly. We understand that the Supreme Personality of God, it is always in control. He doesn't make mistakes. And mistakes don't happen when he's in control, which is always. He's always in control. He is in control of the material nature. And that material nature is very, very difficult to control. We need his help to do it. But sometimes we try to do it on our own. And then, or most of the time, we try to do it on our own. And then what happens is all hell breaks loose. And we suffer in so many different ways, not only in future lives, but in our present life, moment to moment, we suffer because we attempt to put ourselves forward as the Supreme Controller. Now, in the Srimad Bhagavatam and throughout our Shastra, there are references occasionally to things that happen to people almost as if they didn't deserve it. In other words, their actions didn't cause it. We see sometimes there's reference to untimely death. And in the Shyamantaka Jewel section story of the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto, it's described that the Shyamantaka Jewel could eliminate disease and suffering and untimely death, unnecessary suffering. So there is a concept there that sometimes we get reactions which we didn't specifically act in such a way as to cause. But Krishna is not out of control. He orchestrates these things to teach us lessons, to arrange for our spiritual advancement. So then when we suffer and we feel like, well, this wasn't fair, right? It wasn't fair. Why did these things happen to me? Why do bad things happen to good people? Then we have to be very careful where we go from there. Because if we're not very careful where we go from there, we'll wind up in the Hiranyakashipu camp, which is not where we want to be. And we'll try and get revenge, sometimes even trying to get revenge against Krishna. Right? After all, who are we mad at? When Dharma was questioned by Parikshit, you know, who did this to you? Here he was standing on one leg, trembling, and Prickett came over and he said, who did this to you? I'll take care of this culprit because I'm the ruler here. No one can hurt a cow or a bull in my kingdom. Dharma's answer wasn't, well, listen, it was that guy over there. You see him, he's running away. He's wearing a crown. He looks like a king. It was his fault. No, his response was, well, some say that it might have been because of my, you know, this or that or the other thing. But the way I see it, it's exactly what I deserve. And actually, in the Bhagavad Gita, it's even described that the devotee sometimes perceives that his suffering isn't even enough, that he actually deserves more, right? That he only by Krishna's intervention was his suffering mitigated. Actually, he deserved to suffer much more. Do we see like that? I know I don't see like that. And certainly, it's very difficult to see like that. And we see that again and again, that in our scripture, we see again and again that people revert to this revenge mentality, and it's very difficult for them to get out. I saw a bumper sticker that said, if you complain about your life, God will make you stay here longer. And so do we complain? Do you ever hear yourself complain? I know I complain all the time. It's in my blood. Jewish people, they like to complain. And we look at the world and we see it's unfair. I remember when I was in college, I was in the Students for a Democratic Society, SDS, and we were complaining all the time. We were ready to tear down the government. We were ready to smuggle people out of the country. We took presidents of universities and hung them from chairs outside the university windows. And somehow or other, we thought by venting our anger in that way, something was going to change. Maybe we could have used our energy a little bit more wisely. We see Srila Prabhupada, when he first came in contact with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he also was, following Gandhi. And he was appreciating, at least overtly, he was appreciating how the idea of wrongdoings on the part of the British government towards the Indian people had to be mitigated. But when he came in contact with Bhakti Siddhanta, that wasn't Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's position, he said, we don't have to worry about these material suffering. There'll always be material suffering. The root of our suffering is that we're not Krishna conscious enough. That's where we have to look. And we don't have to wait for any change in politics or any change in management or fixing any kind of anomaly. What we have to do is we have to become Krishna conscious. And we have to make as many people Krishna conscious as possible. Like Mother Akuti was speaking yesterday so strongly about preaching. But sometimes we tend to separate preaching from our lives. I'm going to go out and preach. We're going to have a weekend warrior program. We're going to go preach on Sunday. So we take that preaching, we put it over there. We get prepared for it, right? We put on a nice cloth, a sari, or make sure our tilak is fresh, or even maybe sometimes we take off our tilak and we put on some other outfit, and we go out there and we think, okay, now I'm going to preach. But the fact of the matter is we preach all the time. And so even though Hiranyakashipu here is preaching to his relatives, because his life wasn't dedicated to this philosophy, he wasn't a very good preacher. And those people who looked at his pastimes, his activities, could see quite clearly that he really didn't get it. Even though he was talking about it, even though he was talking about the super soul being in charge and being, you're not this body, he really didn't get it. And his actions spoke louder than his words. The same thing with this couple I was talking about before, this man or this woman who's trying to attract this other person by saying so many nice words, sending Valentine's Day cards. Actually, in India recently, there were riots trying to keep Valentine's Day out of India because there's so much feeling about this idea of, you know, just instilling this false sense of love in people by, you know, some card or some heart or some chocolates or some whatever. And it goes on for how long? And then the result is what? Divorce, hatred, using another person for your own sense gratification. So if you stay around long enough and you really observe the heart of that person, then you'll see that it's just a facade. Behind it is the desire for personal profit, adoration, and distinction, and even the desire to hurt another person or manipulate another person. But, you know, the thing is that Krishna is in our heart. So he doesn't have to stay around and watch to see what our intention is. He knows from the second we wake up. From the minute we're born, from the second we're implanted within the womb of a mother, our desires, even before that, the desires that are planted in our mind, intelligence, and false ego, they're completely open book to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can read them in a second. He knows whether we've been good or bad. And unless we change our mentality, our intention, then what we do or what we say really doesn't affect Krishna. He only accepts our intention. When he talks about offer me a leaf, a fruit, a water, flower, and I will accept it, he says that you have to offer it with love and devotion. I want the intention. I've got lots of fruit. I've got lots of flowers. I've got lots of people offering incense. I don't need any of that stuff. What I need is your love and devotion. And if you pretend that you're going to offer it without that love and devotion, I won't accept it. Or at least I'll only accept it to the degree that you surrender. All of them, as they surrender unto me, that I reward them accordingly. So if you surrender a little, Krishna knows that. If you surrender a lot, Krishna knows that. What is your intention? And the interesting thing is that for our intention becomes very, very clear when we're in a situation where we're suffering. Actually, I was speaking with Bhojan Prabhu. We were talking about some experiences we had together when we were in Buffalo in 1968, 69, 70, in those times. There was a story about, we were out on Harinam in Buffalo, New York, and Prahladananda, then Das Brahmachari, we would have a harmonium on a table and we'd line up kind of against the wall in front of this big department store, Hengara's. And we were singing, and some devotees were distributing back to God. And one guy walked by, and he just punched Prahladananda right in the face. And Prahladananda slid down the wall and kind of on the ground. And this other devotee, who was a big guy, he took off in the crowd, and he ran after the person that had caused the disturbance. And he was not, you know, pushing people out of the way and running and running. And then finally, he didn't catch the person, and he came back all panting and frustrated because he hadn't caught him. And Rupanuga Prabhu, who was then our temple president, he said, "Don't worry, you know, he'll get his karma. Krishna will take care of him." And he said, "Yeah, but I won't get the sense gratification of punching him in the face." So we find ourselves in that mood. And so what do we do to avoid it? How do we see it in ourselves? And when I was discussing these things with Bhojan Prabhu, he asked me a very interesting question. He said, "So let's just say that some of the suffering in your life you didn't earn." The devotee generally thinks that I earned all the suffering that I experienced. Matter of fact, I earned more, but Krishna is mitigating it. But just let's say, for the sake of argument, that there was some suffering you were undergoing that you really didn't earn. It happened somehow or other, Krishna's will, whatever, it happened, and now you're suffering, and Krishna came to you and he said, "I'm really sorry that you suffered in this way." Right? The gopis had that experience. They gave everything to Krishna, and then he disappeared. And they thought it wasn't fair. They said, "Krishna, we gave everything to you. Our hearts are completely absorbed in you. We think of you 24/7. Even when he left them, they were thinking of him undergoing his pastimes, lamenting, crying, ready to die. And then what did Krishna do? He left them and watched from behind a bush as they went through their anxiety. How unfair." And that was what the gopi said. What kind of a lover are you, anyway, that you let your beloved suffer like this? So let's say Krishna comes and he says, "Okay, I'm sorry. And whatever you want to repay you for that suffering, I'll give it to you. What do you want?" What are you going to ask him for? Alexis? Or a bigger bank account? Or better looks, or your youth back, or a degree from the university? What are you going to ask Krishna for when he says to you, "Okay, you can have it, whatever you want, I'll pay you back for your suffering in this life"? What are you going to ask him for? So then you'll see, then we see, when we look and we think, well, when he asked me that question, I didn't know what to say, and I very rarely don't know what to say. So I was actually thinking, what would I ask Krishna for? And if I'm going to ask him for pure devotional service, or I'm going to ask him for unalloyed love of him, then why do I have to wait for that to happen to ask for that? That's the key to this Tateinu Kampam verse, that if I can just tolerate the pain and just ask Krishna for pure devotional service, that's what I'd ask him for. If he came and offered me something, that's what I'd ask him for. Unless I really don't get this philosophy at all, what else would I ask him for? So then, just ask him for that. Ask him for that. Pray for that. Whatever it is that you would ask him for, you pray for that, and at the same time, tolerate the suffering. And then the ability or the right to go back to Godhead becomes yours, the Dayabhak. It becomes your inherited right. You don't have to do anything else. So Hiranyakashipu, he missed the point. And he went back right after speaking so nicely, he went right back to getting revenge, trying to get even with the material energy for causing him suffering or his family members suffering. So we have to be very careful that we don't get into that syndrome. And that when we asked ourselves this question, if Krishna came and offered us anything, what would we ask for? Just like the gopis, just like Prahlad, just like even Dhruva Maharaj at the end. What did they ask for? My Lord, I was asking for things, but I don't really want anything. All I want to do is go back to Godhead. And if you're really, really advanced, like Mother Akuti is and some other great devotees who preach all the time, then you'll think, well, not only do I want to go back, but I don't want to go back alone. I want to take as many people with me as possible and even take it a step further and say, okay, I'll stay here and I'll take their suffering. Just let them go back. That's even the higher position. So we have these tools by the mercy of Hiranyakashipu and the mercy of the Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada's wonderful example as well as his teaching, because he taught both by his action and his words how we should look at our lives and how we should see our suffering and how we should understand what we want in this material, from this material life, what we want at the end, how do we want the story to have a happy ending. Sometimes we play games where we start a story and then we try to write the ending. So how do we want to write the ending? And we should do that very, very carefully, because Krishna knows, and that's what he accepts only. That's the only thing he accepts, is our intention. So we have to be very careful what our intention is. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Yes, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
You mentioned that whatever happens to us is exactly what we deserve, that Krishna is controlling, that we should not complain. The fact that Krishna is controlling means that we have no common sense, that we have no action at all. Like, if I'm due $1,000 in my tax return and I get $500, I should accept that this is exactly what I deserve. If a doctor operates my left knee instead of my right knee, I should say this is exactly what I deserve. It's Krishna's mercy. I'm not talking about revenge, but practical issues on day-to-day life.
Yes, that's certainly there. And we have to, I mean, just like Prabhupada with the land in Juhu, for instance, when Mr. N was making attempts to steal that land from the devotees, Prabhupada definitely put up a fight. You know, he didn't just say, oh, well, it's Krishna's mercy, I guess he's going to take the land away. We're not really meant to act that way, and if he amputates, you know, we get our right leg amputated, then we may sue and get money. Then what we do with our money, that becomes a point of contention. We certainly can't get the leg back necessarily, so we have to see that. Somewhere we have to see that as the will of the Supreme. How we react to it, that will depend what happens to us next. And again, Krishna doesn't only see the action, he sees the intention. So if our intention is to just make things right, maybe to get some money so we can engage in devotional service and we don't have to worry about money anymore, but if we become obsessed with it, if we become driven by it, if someone owes us $1,000 and we get $500, and then we spend an excessive amount of time or energy to the point, especially where if it detracts from our ability to think of Krishna and we're just thinking of getting this money, then yes, it's not a good thing. And we should accept it as Krishna's will. We have to accept. We don't have a choice, really. If we understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, somewhere along the line, we have to acknowledge that Krishna did that. So, because of our need, somewhere Krishna did that. How we react to it, that's another thing. So if someone punches me, I can make a choice at that moment. I can decide I should punch him back, because why did he punch me? After all, I didn't do anything. And who's this guy to punch me? And I'm stronger than him. He's smaller. I can win this fight. If I walk away, the karma ends right there. If I hit him, the karma continues. And where it goes, I don't know. Either do you. We'll have to find out. Those are the previews of the coming attractions. We'll find out. Don't worry about it. So we have to act intelligently. Krishna gave us our intelligence. But our intelligence is meant to be used to advance in devotional service. So we have to mix that into the equation when we consider, is this worth pursuing? Is this course of action, the rectification of this situation, and how much damage will be done as I proceed down this line? You know, even materially, will I spend more money fixing this situation than I lost not fixing it? That happens sometimes, right? We go to court and we spend more money getting the money than we spent losing the money. But we have to examine with our intelligence. We have to examine sometimes with the association and help of senior devotees. We have to examine and we have to chart the best course of action. But even that course of action, even those options that come before us, even our choices as we make them, we have to accept the consequences for them. And there's nothing that happens without Krishna's will. Krishna's will is all good. Accepting that may be difficult, but it's the truth. And we have to see that in our lives.
Just one comment. Prabhupada once told Brahmananda, Brahmananda told me this, that Krishna consciousness is 10% faith and 90% common sense. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, in practical matters, we just have to use common sense.
Someone once asked Srila Prabhupada, what is common sense? And Prabhupada's response was, common sense means that you understand that Krishna will take care of everything. So, I mean, but at the same time, we have to engage in common sense. I agree. In these material matters, we have to do what we have to do.
No, in the past, many times we made mistakes with the mentality that Krishna's controlling everything. This leader is breaking the principle that Krishna's controlling everything. He's misleading people. He's driving people to hell, but Krishna's controlling everything. And nobody wanted to take an action. So there is a danger in this mentality. So there must be a balance there.
Yes, there has to be a balance there. I completely agree. But even in those circumstances, Prabhupada often took a position that would surprise you. In Detroit, in New Orleans, there were leaders that weren't following, that were doing different things. Devotees wanted to take him down. Prabhupada said no. He actually responded with, what have you done to push on this movement? And he wouldn't take them down. Over the course of time, he may have taken them down, but he didn't just take them down. When one devotee who was a very good sannyasi and very big preacher in our movement, you know, had a fall down, he had some problems. I was in Vrindavan at the time, the news came to Srila Prabhupada, we threw him out, we did this, we did that, we wrote letters, we told everybody they shouldn't let him in, and Prabhupada was furious. He said, you must get him back at any cost. Look what you've done. All you've done is made it more difficult for him. So I'm not negating what you said, because I agree with what you said. But it's not that black and white.
But there's a big difference when Prabhupada was on the planet, in control of the society, and in today's environment. It's not comparing apples to apples.
Well, I don't agree with you. Because we have to act, just like you're saying. We're in a material world, and we have to act. Prabhupada was our acharya. So somehow we have to come to the mature level of understanding where we're certainly not Prabhupada. But that doesn't mean we don't have to act. And it doesn't mean that we don't have to act with Srila Prabhupada's instruction and behavior in front of us. That has to be added into the equation. And we have to see where we fall, what our intention is. There's a million what ifs, right? You could what if, what if, what if, what if, what if I'm on the desert and, you know, there's nothing to eat and a helicopter comes over and it drops down food and all it is grains cooked by karmis. Can I eat them? You know, so how are you going to come? Okay, what if? But if your intention is pure, then Krishna, through your heart, will direct you. You can't eliminate the sarvasya chamhoam vidhi sannivishto factor. Krishna is sitting in the heart. So is Prabhupada. He's directing us. And if we can still our own mind and our own desire, then we can hear the super soul. We can hear the direction of Krishna. How we do that and how successful we are, maybe we'll make mistakes. Prabhupada was never afraid of having us make mistakes, even big ones. He put young people in big positions, sent them off halfway across the world. gave them almost impossible tasks. Some succeeded, some failed. But Prabhupada always saw the effort, okay? And if we can mature to that level, then we'll be more successful, okay? Krishna sees our intention. That's one thing I'm 100% convinced of, that he sees our intention. Our work may look very faulty. Our decisions may even be faulty. But if our intention is pure, Krishna sees our intention. Unfortunately, many times we don't see our intention. What we see is the work, we see the action, we see the fall down, we see the weakness, we don't see the intention. The intention is really what Krishna accepts as his as the offering. So we have to be careful. And I agree with you, we have to act, we have to think, we have to use our intelligence, our common sense. But let's do it in a corroboration and at least acknowledge that the way I perceive something may not be the only way to perceive it. Hiranyakashipu perceived the world in a way that hopefully we don't perceive the world. And many people, like I was talking about Janmajaya and Dhruva Maharaj, they perceived the world one way, and then after they made advancement, they saw the world in a very different way, and they realized that they had made great error. So we have to, you know, we have to depend, we have to acknowledge the Krishna factor.
No, I'm not in disagreement on that point. Mm-hmm. But good intention, sometimes we see good intention, and Prabhupada also said that we judge things by the results. He has great intention. I cannot judge anybody's intentions.
No, but
sometimes the result is a disaster.
Right. So then we have to damage
the lives of so many people.
So then we have to corroborate together with good intention and figure out what to do about it. I agree with that. We have to. But we can't take matters into our own hand.
That's my main point. No, I mean, I'm not proposing that. My main point is when preaching this philosophy that I'm receiving exactly what I deserve and Krishna is in control of everything. We're not robots. We are individual souls that have common sense and action. So we have to be very careful and has to have balance on that. Otherwise, it becomes just fanaticism. It doesn't become the intelligent Krishna consciousness that Prabhupada gave to us.
But even
that's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you. Stididi, did you have your hand up?
Yeah. When we talk about Hiranyakashipu speaking red acknowledge, I mean, you know, he wasn't like, I was just thinking, probably not a good thing. But he wasn't like doing it like a devotee does it for purification. And he was, because like you brought it up. I mean,
It was totally material.
He was just like sort of using it towards his own personal ambition.
Right.
It was like a tool to get to a,
exactly.
a means to an end.
That's why I said it's just like a boy or a girl trying to make a play for somebody else. That they'll say whatever they have to say, but their intention is wrong. They're looking to manipulate. And he was just looking to get his mother and his sister-in-law out of the way, you know, take care, okay, stop whining and, you know, here's the philosophy, chew on that for a while. I got a world to take over.
Yeah, I mean, basically he would say anything. It's just that was pragmatic for his...
Well, it was also his knowledge. It was common knowledge because of the family that he was born in, because of the situation he was born in. Vedic teachings were the prevalent way of thought. And so Prabhupada said even in India, a common person who's a rickshaw driver or just a farmer, you know, common person will have that knowledge, that basic knowledge that I'm not this body. Now it's starting to dissipate because the Vedic culture is starting to become very holy, not holy in the sense of worshipable, but holy in the sense of full of holes in India. But still, there's that undercurrent of worship, of understanding of Krishna, of the knowledge that the soul is the reality and the body is the illusion. There's still that realization despite all the deviation, but it's getting less. But in this time, certainly, it was very prevalent. Yes?
You were mentioning that there's sometimes circumstances which arise and there are two parties trying to talk to each other and there's underlying manipulative currents. Mm. So is there a way to go about doing it without manipulation? I mean, how do you know if you're being manipulative or not?
Well, that's an excellent question. And at least in regards to that particular part of, you know, life, marriage, boy meets girl, etc., which is the example I use. In all our lives, in all parts of our lives, the actual recommendation is that we seek guidance from senior persons. The way Bhojan Prabhu put it was that if, you know, the philosophy is the philosophy. When you're discussing the Bhagavatam, when you're discussing the philosophy is there. But when you have to apply it personally, and there's, you know, entrance of time, place, and circumstance, and so you don't know how to apply the philosophy. Arjuna didn't know how to apply the philosophy on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So then you go to a doctor, and you get a specific prescription for your need. So you have to go to the doctor who can look at you, examine you, see what you need, and then prescribe things accordingly. So whenever the lines become gray or unclear, then we have to corroborate. We have to seek advice from senior Vaishnavas, Vaishnavis. But we tend to act on our own, and when we act on our own, then it's not only easy to be manipulated, but it's also easy to slip into a manipulative mode. Because our desire is so strong that we can't see beyond it. At least I know for myself that happens, that when the desire is strong, it clouds the vision. You can't see beyond your own desire. I have to end because it's getting late. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.